everyone. My name is Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. Our faith tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so they can share their extreme strength and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, it's hot up here. I'm about ready to have a... I'm having a menopause moment. Hold on. I'm getting there, Mark. Don't get mad. Each week, we recognize... It's an honest program, okay? Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of August the 6th, 2011. She has held service position as a literature person. When I asked her what her favorite AA motto is, she told me one. I'm not going to tell you what it is because she changed it. Maybe she'll tell you her story. But when I did, she came up to me and asked me to change it to keep it simple. So, we've been waiting for this all day. May I have the envelope, please? Thank you. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Gina A. from Visalia. Please give her a warm welcome.
I'm Gina, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, I feel very special. I wanted to thank Bill for asking me to be here. But he's not here. And I did want to say thank you, even though when he first asked me, I was like, oh my God, because this is a program of honesty. And I knew if I went to my sponsor and said, oh, Bill asked me to speak, but I'm really nervous and I don't feel like doing it, she wasn't going to say, that's great, just say no. You know, that's kind of, that's not how this works. So here I am, and I'm nervous, but just work with me. Give me a couple minutes, and then I might start making sense. So I do want to say, I do really want to thank Bill, because in asking me to speak, it gave me a chance to reflect on my past. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm the kind of alcoholic who, maybe I should, is that better? Who very easily forgets how bad it was. I can just be like, you know what, look at me, I have a little time. Is that good? Is this okay? I have some time now, and I got this. And given the chance to speak, I started reflecting back, and it didn't take long, only a couple minutes, till I was like, oh my God, I was a train wreck. Thank God I'm here. I need some serious help. I'm in the right place. So that is my thank you to Bill. And I also know, you know, how important it is to share our past from reading in the book. There's a part that talks about how our past can avert misery and death in others. And how, what a miracle that is to think my past, something that I was so ashamed of, something that when I came into this program, I was terrified to even look at on paper, but now I'm able to stand up here and share it with you and hopefully affect at least one person in this room. Because I know when I came into this program and I got to listen to some people speak, I was like, wow, you know what, these people are like me, I'm not unique, I'm in the right place. And I know how important sharing your past is, because I specifically remember when I went to the women's meeting, which if there are any women newcomers in here, I totally recommend it. It's on Tuesday night at Trinity Church at 7 o'clock. I remember I walked in those doors and I looked around and I was like, there's no way these women drink like I drink. And there's no way they use like I use. They look totally normal, you know? But thank goodness I hung around and I listened and I was able to see again, wow, you know what? I'm not as special as I thought. I didn't have all these big problems that nobody else understood. So here I am, and here's my story. My sobriety date is August 6, 2011, which means I roughly have a little over 18 months, and that kind of means that I'm still a baby in this program, and I'm still learning every day, and I'm still very, very happy to be here. My first drink, I think, was a little bit different than a lot of people I hear share. I hear that they, you know, had that first drink, and it was like, yay, this is it. For me, it wasn't that way, but it was. Once I started drinking at 15, I was always drinking to get drunk. That was the motive, right? And that's what you do when you're in high school. You drink and you get drunk. And I thought that was completely normal. Looking back now, I see how that's an issue, that you're 15 and you're just constantly drinking. But that was my story. However, I was able to kind of keep it together in high school and get good grades and went on to college, and the same thing happened. But since I've done a lot of reflection, I'm able to look back and see how the drinking affected my life. And when it came to college, I was always, and you know what, I shouldn't even say college, in life in general, I was always cutting myself short. I cut any corner I could. I wanted to succeed with the goal, but, you know, with the least amount of work. And I remember walking into my counselor and saying, you know what, I want to get this, I want to get a BS in marine biology. And he told me all the work that it would entail, all the classes. And right away I was like, can't do that. I have a drinking schedule, you know. I have to be drinking on the weekends. I can't be taking all these classes. I need to maintain that goal but find an easier way to do it. So long story short, I ended up getting my degree in communications. Go through college, same thing. I'm drinking. I'm pretty much a party girl, but everything's still under control. I ended up meeting my husband. I think I was around 20, and he's my partner in crime, right? Everyone's got to have one. He's my buddy. He's my go-to. He gets it, because why would you date somebody who you couldn't go out with and get drunk? That'd be crazy, right? Who even wants a boyfriend like that? I had to have somebody who understood the amount I needed to drink. So we're together. Everything's good. I graduate college, get a job. We end up moving to Visalia because we decided that that would be a little cheaper than Los Angeles. That's actually where we're from. And this is when kind of the trouble starts for me. And I know this is an AA meeting, so I won't focus on it. But I feel like if I don't bring it up, I would be lying to everybody. So my trouble really, really starts when I end up going to doctors because I suffer from migraines. They prescribe me all this different medicine that's not working. And eventually they put me on painkillers. Well, it takes me about like a hot second to realize that nothing complements pain medicine like a bottle of wine. Okay, so just notice anytime I'm talking to you in my story and I'm talking about drinking, this is also accompanied by a handful of whatever pills my doctor gave me. So now it's not taking long. I know they talk about it in the book when it hits women harder, and that was me. It was like, woo, drinking so much fun to my life getting out of control very, very quickly. And I was able to hold my job then a lot longer than I should have because I was working at a radio station and my schedule was really, really relaxed. So I was able to be like, oh, I'm meeting with a client and get off early or go in a little bit late. But after about 2.5 years, I decided I need a different job, right? I got to quit this job. I got to get a different job. So I leave and I end up getting a job somewhere where I have to like go in Monday through Friday and stay there for like 8 hours at a time, right? And I'm like, how is anyone supposed to do that? That's hard work, especially when I have to be drinking. So it probably takes about a month for these people to be like, this really isn't working out. And this is when things really hit me hard and the demoralizing feelings and the hopelessness really sets in. So now I don't have a job. My husband and I are fighting. We were about to purchase a house. We ended up losing the house. So within like a month, my life sounds like this horrible country song where I'm just losing everything in it. And I remember staying home from work and like all I had the strength to do was take a shower and drink and, you know, pop pills. And I'm just so depressed. All I can do is like watch reruns of 90210 and just think about like, woe is me. My life's so messed up. And it's a little funny when I look back, but I do want to point out how just horrible it was. I mean, that drinking that was so fun for me in the beginning brought me to this place where I was just on my knees, like wanting to die. I mean, I would wake up in the morning and be like, I hope I get in a car accident today. I hope something happens because I just can't live this way. And if I thought things were bad then, they were just only about to get worse. That was just like my tip. So my husband and I end up separating because I'm just totally in love with this man. But when I'm in my disease, I'm mean. Like, I think you guys can look at me and think I look like a nice girl. Not true. I am horrible. I am that mean person. I go after the person I love, and that's who I love. So I just constantly attack him until I push this man out of my life. So we end up getting a divorce, and I end up moving back in with my parents, and I'm just devastated. I am not working. I'm drinking. I'm taking pills every day. I'm hiding bottles of wine in my bedroom. I end up getting in a car accident. I'm in my new car driving, and I hit a parked vehicle, and I told everybody that it was because I swerved and missed a cat. But I might as well have told them, like, I swerved and missed a tiger. I mean, everybody knew, like, what happened. You know, they were like, right, Gina, that's what you did. So now, you know, adding to my little sad country song, I have no husband, no dog, no car. I mean, it's just pathetic, okay? And I'm at home, I'm not working, like I said, and just all those feelings are really getting to me. And I remember at one time I eventually decided, you know what, like, once again, I was going to find a reason to sober up this time. I was like, maybe if I get a new job, I'll get better. Because before it was like, I'll get better for my mom, or I'll even get better for me, or I'll get better for this reason. And I just I just couldn't do it. I could white knuckle it for a couple of days, or maybe even like once or twice I got a week. But like, I couldn't do it. And I could not, for the life of me, grasp the concept that I couldn't do by myself. I had too much pride to look in the mirror and say, Gina, you're it. You need help. Even though like everything in my life was so unmanageable. So I eventually talked my parents into sending me to a rehab. But at this point, I thought I was willing enough, but I wasn't willing enough to do any work, if that makes any sense. I thought I could go to a 30-day rehab, and you guys would, put your magic wand over me and say, you're better. And it didn't work that way. You know, my rehab experience, looking back, my brother jokes it's not funny. He called it my re-up because it was like 10 times worse once I got out. But while I was there, it was really hard for me because my whole entire life I've looked for external things to make me feel better. I was looking for that drink or that pill. So when I was in rehab and I didn't have anything like that, it was like the hole inside my stomach was so big and I just had to latch on to something to make it better. And my rehab was a non-com facility, which means like there's guys and girls there but you can't talk to each other. And everyone would always joke around and call it like a rehab romance when you were talking to like a different guy in the facility, which is ridiculous because you can barely talk to him. You're like, can look and smile at each other or pass notes. And I end up having like three little different romances of passing notes, like I'm in high school, just people to try to like find what I was looking for because I just couldn't find it. So needless to say, I didn't really learn anything when I was in rehab. I got a sponsor because that's what I needed to do. I didn't really utilize her. And I do remember though sitting outside at a meeting and she was like, Gina, do you know what happens, if this addiction or this alcoholism is left untreated? And I go, yep, jails, institutions, or death. And she's like, well, where are you? And I was like, I'm at rehab. She's like, you're in an institution. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I had no idea. I was like, oh crap. You know, she's right, I gotta get a handle on this. So that was kind of a big eye-opener for me. And I also remember at night, a random person would come and take us to different meetings, and this woman had come take us to a meeting, and it was the first birthday meeting I'd ever been to. And they were like, what did you think of it? And I was like, well, honestly, I thought it was ridiculous. Why would anybody ever celebrate me acting correctly? That is dumb. I already have a birthday. I don't get it. And I could tell the woman look at me with like that, oh my God, this girl's lost. She's not going to stay sober. And thank God now I can say I understand birthday meetings, but I just wanted to bring that up to show you how much I didn't get it. There were so many things I didn't get. So needless to say, I get out of rehab, and I'm sober for about maybe 2 weeks, right? Maybe for me. And I start telling myself right away, I'm like, you know what? I'm back at work, right? I work all day. I deserve to come home and drink. Like, who doesn't? So, and again, my crazy mind, my mind of insanity, which what is insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, is telling me, Gina, you can do this time. You have self-knowledge, right? Like Bill talks about in the book. I'm like, I get it. I know what this alcoholism and drug addiction are all about. I'm not going to go down that road again, And I would do different things, which this is kind of like embarrassing to mention, but I'd be like, okay, if I'm going to drink, I'm going to like make little notes for myself so I don't mess up. Like put a note on my cell phone that says, do not use, Don't call anybody. Or like put a note on my computer that says, do not go on Facebook. This way there wouldn't be that like embarrassment of waking up the next day thinking like, oh my God, like what did I do? Who did I call? Who do I have to call back and like act like, no, I wasn't wasted. That was just a nice, happy, friendly person who slurs, It's no big deal. So it was like, I just didn't get it, So here I am after rehab. My poor parents, what do people say? Like, you spend like $6,000 on a big book or something like that? That was my experience. And my parents tried so hard to get me better, and right away I'm back in this horrible position. And this time, just like the book talks, it is worse than ever before. I am working every day, going to work, just wasted. Eventually, my employer has to sit me down and talk to me like, hey, it would be cool if you came to work because you're out of, paid sick time and paid vacation. And I'm like, well, it's okay. You don't have to pay me. And they're like, that's kind of not the point of you being here. Like, you're supposed to come to work, and then we pay you. Do you not understand that? So, needless to say, that job doesn't end up. And after this time, my husband and I kind of reconnect, and we end up getting back together. And it's so funny because we're both trying to tell each other, like, I'm sober now, and I'm trying, because we both know if we go back to the same using, it's not going to work out. So with us being together for like 2 weeks, because I had been with him for many, many years prior to our divorce, we're like, hey, you know, it would be a great idea to have a baby. Yeah, that's what we should do. We should have a baby, right? So, of course, I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea because that, like, takes a minute to have a baby. No, 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 it doesn't. It doesn't. So literally we have this conversation, and within a week or a month, I find out that I'm pregnant. And right before this happens, my husband sees, you know, what's happening with us. And he's like, it's time for me to go to rehab and get better. And I'm like, what? No, we're fine. You know, we can do this. And so he ends up going away to rehab. And by some miracle, I end up getting pregnant. So, which is good, because if I wasn't pregnant, he would have went away and I would have just gone crazy while he was gone. And he would have been like, I can't do this. So, when I found out I was pregnant, I do have to admit, I was wasted. How sad is that? I'm wasted as I'm taking my pregnancy test. And it was the first time where I realized I connected the dots. Before, when people would tell me my drinking or my using was an issue, I didn't get it. I was like, no, the issue is you making it an issue. You should just accept me. You know, you should just accept me, the tornado, right? The tornado they talk about in the book, that was totally me, just going around, just messing up everybody's life. And that's how I felt. I was like, you should just accept me, and why are you making my problem your problem? And when I found out I was pregnant, it was the first time where I was like, okay, no excuses. This person's growing in my body. I'm going to affect them if I drink. I'm going to affect them if I take pills. And when I have this baby, it's going to affect them. The way I like to drink and use, I can't take care of a baby. I don't know how you guys are, but that's not the way I did it. So I was like, okay, no more excuses. I have to do this. So finally that willingness, which now we know, which was usually at a 10%, probably went up to like a 60%, was like, okay, you know what? You're really sick. And you've tried this your way 1,000 times, probably more than that, and it doesn't work. You know, that saying in the book where one is too many, 1,000 is never enough, I get that. That's really the story of my life. Once I have one, it is over, and I don't even know what I'm going to do or where I'm going to end up. So I'm like, I gotta change. So I remember when I was in rehab, I had this NA, like, golden green book that would walk you through steps, and I was like, you know what? I don't need your meetings. I don't need your sponsors. I'm going to do this myself. And the truth was, because I was embarrassed that I was pregnant. I thought if I walked into a meeting, you guys, you know, I would say I was pregnant, and you'd say, you're not allowed here, because if you're pregnant, you're supposed to be sober. You know, did anybody tell you that? You're not allowed to be here. So I was trying to have those defense mechanisms, like, I don't need you guys. And I go and I open this book, and like the first paragraph, like, oh, congratulations, good for you. And literally like the first or second line in it is like, the only thing you can do wrong is do this yourself. And I was like, gosh darn it. Okay, so here it is. I'm trying to do this alone. And obviously times before, it's not working. So I call up an old sponsor from LA, and I'm like, you know, hey, let me work through the steps. And still at this time, I have that nervousness, like, you're not going to accept me if I'm pregnant. So I'm still like, forget about the meetings, forget about this, and I'm just working the steps with her over the phone. And at one point, we get to the fourth step, and I did it a little differently. It wasn't done how I've done it here. It was just like my list of my resentments and, you know, the things I've done wrong and blah, 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 blah. And I call her on the phone, and I go over my list, and she's like, okay, do you feel better? And I was like, yeah. And then I'm like, well, I'm thinking to myself, no, I don't feel better, because I don't even get what the point of that was. I just told you why I'm a horrible person, and I still feel horrible, you know? And after that, going on to step 6 and 7, I couldn't do it, because I was like, I don't even know my defects. Like, I get that I have them, but I don't understand it. And all while this was happening, my husband gets out of rehab, and he ends up meeting somebody, and they invite him to a speaker event in Fresno. And I'm like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to meetings. It's ridiculous. But he's like, come on, let's do this. I'm like, okay. So we go out there, and we end up going out to dinner afterwards, and I meet my future sponsor and another woman in this room, and they opened their arms to me, and they were so sweet, and they both were like, hey, try this meeting, or meet with me and go here. And, you know, I told them that I was pregnant, and I was like, okay, they, you know, they accept me. And my sponsor, who eventually became my sponsor, she slowly but surely kind of walked me through everything to where I felt comfortable, and realized that I needed to let go of my sponsor in LA and get a Visalia sponsor. So I called my old sponsor and said, you know what, I need to have somebody where I'm local. And she was wonderful. She was like, I totally understand. And that's when my willingness was at, like, 100%. I mean, this woman could have been like, okay, get up in the morning, do 5 jumping jacks and stand on your head. Or she could have said anything and I would have been like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. If that's going to keep me sober, I'm going to do it. Because that was the first time in my life where it was like, I did it. I'm going to do it somebody else's way. It took me a couple years to get that my way wasn't working. Thank God I got it, right? Thank goodness. And in my head, I had this like invisible timeline because I'm pregnant. So I'm like, okay, I got 9 months. And 9 months to get through the steps, because that's another funny thing. I thought when I went through the steps, I wasn't going to be crazy anymore. I was like, I'm good. I'm all better, right? Totally not true. I'm still crazy. Still need to do this every day. But in my head at the time, I was like, okay, I have this timeline. I need to get it done. And then I'm going to get better, and I could have this good life with my baby. So I took it so seriously, and I'm meeting with this woman once a week, and we're going through the big book, page by page, and she's reading it with me. And it was like, amazing, because first it's this book, and then you start reading it, and you're like, these people are talking to me. They're telling me my life experiences, like it's all coming to life for me. There are so many parts in there I related to. I really related to the part about the actor who's constantly trying to control the show. I mean, that was my life. Like, here I am in this, like, drunken stupor, right, trying to control other people and not understanding why I'm causing so much conflict and why I'm not getting along with these people. I just didn't get it. I mean, that's still a concept that I struggle with today, but I didn't understand that I was powerless over everybody else. I thought, I was like, no, if you only do what I want you to do, you know, everything will work out. And that's just one example out of many in the big book that I was like, that's me. There was one more that I remember, and I'm probably like totally misquoting everything, and I apologize, but there's a part that talks about basically you're in this beautiful forest, and you're completely distracted by the ugliness of, like, 2 of the trees. Well, that's how my life was when I was using. I mean, I could go anywhere or do, you know, anything and just be pissed off about it. I mean, my husband and I, we went to Tahiti for my honeymoon. Tahiti had one of those beautiful huts on the water. Oh, I'm pissed. Go figure, right? I found a reason to be upset about that somehow. And it just was like that all the time. I was just spoiled, ungrateful brat because I was so angry all the time. And that was another thing. I was angry, but I didn't even realize that. I know with my sponsor now, we had gone over, you know, the 4 steps, and when it came to resentment, I was like, I don't even have resentment. I'm fine, and I'm at peace, and maybe I owe a big sorry to myself, but I'm not mad at anybody, you know? And then I eventually, like, start thinking, because I'm going to the park every day, religiously, like, doing this work, and I'm starting to write everything down, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so angry. Like, I had no idea how pissed off I was, right? I hate, like, 30 people, and I didn't even know it. Like, you don't even know yourself until you come here. Oh my God, I know, right? So, anyway, so like I said, we're going through the book, and I'm just learning so much and going through the book with her and developing that relationship with her, because I really didn't get it. You know, thank God she had sat me down and she was kind of like, this is what I expect of you. You know, what do you expect of me? Because at that point, I needed and I was willing for that kind of structure. I needed someone to say, hey, go to 5 meetings a week, call me every day. And that was one thing, you know, if newcomers are listening, that I didn't get. I remember when she was like, call me every day, I was like, that's ridiculous. Why do I need to do that? And I get it now, because you are building a relationship with this person that's so important, because eventually you're going to go to this person with a lot of decisions in life. So thank God I understand that now. I know, you know, one of the other things in the book where it kind of talks about a complete life transferring experience, and that's kind of what I went through, you know, and it does say it's a little bit difficult because you're taking all these life concepts and you're completely switching them around because you need a new pair of glasses. Like, you come in here drinking or doing whatever and you just don't see how badly you're seeing everything. You know, you become this miserable person, and that can all change by kind of having a different reality. And there's many things I do today to make my reality different. Like, I get up in the morning, and one of the first things I do is pray. And I know so many people are like, oh, the first thing I do is have a cup of coffee. You know, kind of like, don't mess with me until I have a cup of coffee. That's kind of how I feel about praying. It sounds ridiculous, but I'm like, just let me pray, get myself, you know, in order, and then we will figure it out. Because that's another thing. This is a daily reprieve, and my sponsor reminds me of this. This is not something that you work the steps and you're good, or you just do one time. Daily, I need to do certain things to make sure that I stay sober. So when I wake up in the morning, I say my prayers. I say thank you, God, for today. And I also say thank you, God, for keeping me sober to remind myself that I'm an alcoholic, right? Because I can easily, like I was telling you in the beginning, be like, I'm good. I got this. It wasn't bad. I forget how horrible I felt. I forget that I tried to kill myself. I forget that I lost everything. So I need to remind myself of that in the morning. And I also do something that I never did, which is so easy, is I get up and I say, you know, thank you for all my blessings. And I list them, even the little ones. I say, you know, thank you, God, for my daughter. Thank you, God, for my husband. Thank you for the love I have for them instead of, you know, the love they have for me. And I go through the list. And I even, when I check out at night, I even, you know, write down 5 things I'm grateful for. And it sounds so silly. And I even remember when people would talk to me about doing stuff like that before, I was like, that's ridiculous. How is that going to help? But it truly helps. It's like the beginning of reframing your mind. And after all, that's what I needed, is I needed to just completely reframe my mind. I also went through, there were some things that I went through in sobriety. I went through a C-section, and I was just completely bent out of shape about that, because I was like, they're going to give me pain medicine, and then I'm going to be out on the porch, you know, smoking a pack of cigarettes and drinking a bottle of wine, like one day out of my surgery, right? How sad is that? You know, my mom's, or my husband's taking care of the baby, and I'm just like, bye! So I was really nervous about that, but since I came here and I have tools now, you know, since I came here and I have friends that I could talk to, and I have people that I can call and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to the doctor, you know, I just want you to know that I need to talk to them about giving me medicine, or this is going to happen, and she can give me advice, you know, so I knew that when I went through my surgery, I have my sponsor and other people in the program I could call. I knew that I couldn't hold the medication myself, right? We all, hello, you heard me talk, that would be a bad idea, and those were things I wouldn't have done before, so that's just one example of learning something that sounds so simple to do differently. Because if I wasn't here, my crazy brain would have been like, Gina, you're fine. Just hold on. And if you hurt, take extra. You know? That's what you should do. And that doesn't work, right? That's why I'm here, because that's what my brain wants to tell me. I am just completely crazy. My brain wants to take me away from reality. And that's why I'm in this program, to kind of be reminded of what I have to be grateful for, to be reminded of all the good in my life. So, like I said, I'm so happy that I made it through my C-section, because I did not think I was going to make it at all. And in fact, I do want to say congratulations for the people who stood up and got hugs and shipped, because I have to tell you, I was never brave enough to do that. I could not stand up. I remember when I first got here, first of all, of course, I was nervous to go into a meeting. But if I came into a meeting, like, I don't want you to know that I have a problem, even though I'm in an AA meeting, right? I want you to, like, not know that I drink. And if you do know that I drink, I want you to think that I, like, drink less than everybody else. So I'm not going to share it with you, you know? And this is what my mind told me. I was terrified to be honest, because towards the end, I didn't even know how to be honest. I believed all the BS my head was telling me. I had no idea how to be honest with myself. But with that pregnancy, I finally was like, you know what? I need to change, because I grew up with this wonderful mother, and my daughter deserves that too. Why doesn't she deserve a wonderful mother? You know, I would come in these rooms and I would listen to, thank God, the honesty of all these women telling me their stories of what happened when they were moms. And I'm a judgmental person. It's one of my defects. But you know what? Those times, I wasn't judging anybody. When those moms were telling their stories, I was thinking, oh my God, that's what I'm going to do. That's exactly what I'm going to do if I don't get better. And my daughter, she deserves more than that. She really does. And since I come into this program, you know, thank goodness so far my daughter hasn't yet to see me that way. I am a wonderful mother to her. I'm the kind of person that I always wanted to be. And this program has just opened the doors to so many other things. Like, I always wanted to get into meditation, but I just couldn't do it because I was busy being drunk, right? That was like my first, maybe I'll meditate after I'm drinking, right? So now, here I am finally getting into meditation. I'm just at the beginning of it, but I meditate every day. You know, I meditate every day instead of having to take my Xanax and fall asleep and miss the day. You know, I'm waking up in the morning, and I'm grateful for everything that's in front of me instead of wanting to die. And by no means do I want to stand up here and lead you guys to think, like, I'm sober, everything's so wonderful. Of course not. I still have bad days, you know, but my bad day is nothing compared to one of my days when I was using. Because towards the end, that wasn't fun anymore. You know, I started as a party girl who would go out and have a great time, and towards the end, I was just in my room, just a total recluse. Like, I didn't even want to leave my house. I just wanted to sit in my house and drink and just pray that, you know, maybe I overdose that night. And I do not have to live that way anymore. And another thing that I have to mention is just the miracle in itself that I'm able to stand up and share my past with you. Because as I was saying, like, here's something that when I was first introduced to these rooms, I remember being in rehab and the steps are on the wall, and I saw them, and I know a lot of people look and say, I'm not doing step 5. I'm not listing all this crap. I was like, I'm not doing step 4. I am not listing that stuff to myself. I can't even face myself and the destruction of my past. And thank God, because of this program, I can, and I'm even able to sit up here and share with people I love and strangers and tell you how bad it was for me in hopes that it will help somebody in this room. And I think we're almost out of time. I hope. I can barely see what's going on back there. But thank you so much for letting me be here. And if you have any questions, I can answer questions, right? Which I can't even
answer. Anybody have any questions for
us? Any questions? I haven't sponsored yet. I'm ready to sponsor now, but when I completed my step, I just had my daughter. And I know how important sponsorship is. You know, my sponsor gave me the time and attention I needed, and I didn't want to get into it right when I was having a new baby. So now that she's older, I'm very open to sponsorship. Okay. That sounds like we will talk after the meeting, and I will do that. Any other questions? Oh, yes. If what? Mm-hmm. Because I have help from a higher power. I believe that I am powerless over alcohol and drugs on my own. On my own, I have no power over it. But when I get up every morning and I turn it over, that's what gives me the strength. I'm not, this is not the Gina show anymore. I have help from God. I have help from people in these rooms. So I'm still powerless. If I didn't pray, if I didn't come to these meetings, I'd be drunk right now. And that's why I'm not powerless. Any other questions? No?
Give a big round of applause for Gina!